We've got three sweeps and a seven gamer in the second round of the OHL playoffs after we had three sweeps, two fives, and three sixes in round number one. In case you're curious, by the way, this is not atypical of the entire Canadian Hockey League. Of the 36 series to date, 19 have been sweeps. So I can do the math. That's more than half. And 29 of the 36 series have been of five games or fewer. I don't know, Dan Mahar, what that says about the parity we were talking about in the league this year, at least in the Ontario League. But here we are as we set the stage for Game 7, Saginaw and Sioux, the only series left in our round number two.
I guess if you think about it, it shouldn't be that shocking, because really, if you're a better team or a significantly better team, you should be better most nights against that team. So I guess we should expect more sweeps maybe than we see. I think we're conditioned by the National Hockey League, which typically does not have very many sweeps. But I got to admit, I was certainly surprised by the three sweeps in the second round. I'm not completely shocked by the Kitchener-London one. I think you and I, well, I called it in five games for London. I thought Kitchener would be good enough to sneak one, but it wasn't shocking they didn't. The other two sweeps were shocking to me. Very surprised that as shorthanded as North Bay was, they were able to sweep that good Sudbury team, and really stunned that Oshawa could sweep that Ottawa team. Not surprised at the winners, surprised at the duration.
You and me both in that one. And, you know, did you have Oshawa in round two? I can't remember. I don't think we both had Ottawa.
No, Ottawa
didn't we?
Will be in round one. So, of course, I went with Ottawa. Yeah.
That's how I felt, too. And North Bay fooled us both, because we had the same feeling on Sudbury with the injuries to North Bay and Sudbury finding its game in round number one. And I've said it once, I've said it 158 times. Predictions are for suckers. Only fools make them. And we are the fools that did. Okay, so I made the editorial decision here to start our conversation around the sweeps with North Bay's sweep of Sudbury, because frankly, I think that's the biggest story from both sides. I just alluded to the fact that both you and I thought that it was going to be Sudbury coming out of this series. So not only does North Bay impress the ever-loving heck out of us anyway, but the questions now will be asked again, and for quite some time in the Nickel City.
For sure. And to start on the positive, I let's just be clear. You and I think, Mike, have both been fairly clear that we really have a lot of love for North Bay. Could see this coming many times over. We thought that was, if not the strongest, one of the strongest contenders in the East for sure. We just felt that they were missing some pretty big pieces. And when you're trying to take out a really good team like Sudbury, it's hard missing those pieces. But North Bay, we probably won't doubt you going forward, because you've proven it. But yeah, on the flip side of it, you know, Sudbury cannot be happy with this. After a really good start to the playoffs, unseating a good Mississauga team in five games, looking like they had gotten their act together, built for the playoffs was the story we heard. To get only five home dates, Mike, swept out in round two after kind of going all in this year. Yeah, that's got to be devastating to the fans in Sudbury, and where's the ownership and management go from here? Because that is a poor result, I would say.
Especially based, Dan, on expectations coming in, right? If we were to go back to our preseason predictions, I do believe, I should have really gone back because it's on the record, so you can do that yourself if you want to, but I'm pretty sure we both reluctantly agreed that it would be the Sudbury Wolves. And I don't mean to knock Sudbury while they're down a little bit after being swept out of round two, but history would indicate that Sudbury does not win the Eastern Conference, right? The team's never won an OHL championship. It's only advanced to three in its history. And here we are now with the team getting ousted early. So I think expectations and not meeting them plays a part in the disappointing offseason ahead for fans in Sudbury.
Definitely. And not to bring up any wounds here, Mike, but would you not see this as a little bit analogous to your Toronto Maple Leafs in some ways, in that a good team?
Why you got to be this way? Why you got to be this? No. I think I see where you're going.
Continue. Year Sorry. Over year, you see the talent on paper. You see the talent in the regular season. You might question, can they keep the puck out of the net? Can they defend well enough? You have some of these question marks. But on paper, at the beginning of every year, you look at this roster, and certainly did with Sudbury this year, and say this team should maybe come out of the East, but you never have that confidence to say it, right? And then you get to the playoffs and here we go. So I'm not saying the Leafs are going to lose, Mike. I actually predict them to beat Boston, which might be their death knell. But I see some analogies here.
While we're talking about that, can we just speed talk our way through the rest of this episode of the OHL podcast? Because as usual, we're recording on the Monday night before the Tuesday morning release. And what, I'm about 30 minutes away from puck drop, game two, Leafs and Bruins. Coming back to the Sudbury piece. The other thing is, in fairness, we talked about it through the season, and we're not the only ones. We're not breaking new ground here, but it was obvious that the Sudbury Wolves were going to go as far as their offense would take them. You can bring in Drake Berehowski late in the season as a defensive specialist coach all you want. You can't really change the stripes on the Tiger at that point. And really, look, you take game three of that series and North Bay goes up 2-0. Sudbury scores the next five. They're leading 5-3 with less than 4 minutes to play. Granted, the Battalion were the beneficiaries of a 5-on-3 power play, but they capitalized, forced overtime, and that's all the fight they had in that particular dog slash wolf in Sudbury for that series.
It really was. You know, it's you see the lessons learned, right? Because Mississauga really sunk themselves on penalties at critical times. Sudbury saw that, saw how it can turn the series, and then had it happen to them in round two. But yeah, it's just, it was puzzling. I think a lot of people that have followed hockey for a long time, Mike, are going to say, you can't base your team on offense only and win. That's never a recipe in the playoffs. And I'm not saying that Sudbury didn't have any defense or goaltending, but it was definitely a concern. Their metrics throughout the entire year, even after the trades, were not great. They had trouble keeping the puck out of the net. They had a couple encouraging signs here and there, like Vondras in game one against Mississauga. A few of these things started to look like they might be turning in their favor. But if you want to go deep in the playoffs, kids, you got to keep the puck out of your net, keep it out of your end. You got to defend well. And I just don't think Sudbury ever figured it out this year.
It's probably telling that both Vondras and Vandenberg had to play in the fourth and deciding game or eliminating game for the Sudbury Wolves. Vondras starting, allowing three goals. Vandenberg didn't allow any. The final two goals for North Bay in that 5-0 win were empty netters. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Dan, where we've always said defense wins championship. You got to keep pucks out of your own net. And not to dwell on Sudbury, to not give the credit where it's due to North Bay, playing as shorthanded as they are, injuries, suspensions, et cetera. Arnsby's not even allowed to come back until game two versus Oshawa in the East final as he continues to serve that 6-game suspension North Bay went through so quick. But I'm not trying to dismiss that, but I really do think the bigger story here is, unfortunately, the inability for the Sudbury Wolves to get over that hump. They are now against their Highway 17 rival, 0-8 versus North Bay in the playoffs, dating back to 1992. And you have to go all the way back now. It's 50 years plus of this modern era version of the Sudbury Wolves. You can go back to 1932, a team that featured none other than the Toe Blake when Sudbury won a Memorial Cup. And we all know that's not the modern era by any stretch, but this team is coming up on Chicago Cubs-esque territory, a century of the inability to win a hockey championship. It's tough. I love the city. I love what they're all about. They've had some good teams up there. They had that remarkable run with Mike Foligno, 07, 06, 07. And lots of reasons. They got the wolf on the wire. They got a, you know, classic old barn, et cetera, et cetera. And they just couldn't get it done in a year where they had all the offensive tools certainly to do that. So let me just finish quickly on the North Bay front, because I think you got to give so much credit, especially where it's due. And I'm looking at right at Mike McIver again. I mean, I know I talked about him last week, so I won't go too far, but he allowed 8 goals in the series. It's pretty easy to do the math, right? That's a 2.00 goals against average. His save percentage was 946 in the series. That, my friend, is how you get things done. I don't need to go into great detail about Vilmanis, Wakely, and Ertl, who all showed up, Vilmanis especially, in a big way in that series. And don't look now, Dan, but the North Bay Battalion are going to a third consecutive Eastern Conference final. back up a decade when the team first relocated from Brampton to North Bay, and what did they do? Back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals in 2013 and 2014. Ironically, both of those Eastern Conference Finals against the Oshawa Generals. How about that? It was 2014. Sorry, I said 13. It was 2014 and 15. In 14, they beat Oshawa, go on, lose the OHL final to Guelph. In 15, in the East final, they lose to Oshawa. We all know what Oshawa did after winning the East final, going to the OHL final and winning the Memorial Cup that year, did the Oshawa Generals. But five Eastern Conference championship appearances in, what are we talking, a decade since 2014 for the North Bay Battalion. That is impressive.
What I hear from when you say that, Mike, is never discount experience and never discount establishing a winning culture, because you see it time and time again, right? And these franchises that haven't been able to establish that seem to be, no matter how good they get in their cycle, every third or fourth year they load up, they still can't get over that hump because they've never established that winning culture, that and then gaining that experience. And you're seeing with North Bay this year, you see it a lot of times with London. You see it, you can go down the list with the teams that have had success, and you know, you see them lose a lot of players in the offseason and say, oh, they're not gonna be as good next year, and then shockingly they're as good. And you say, why is that? Well, all the second and third tier players on their roster gained all that experience, saw what happened, saw what they needed to do, and then they do it. When you don't have that in your room and in your group, it's really hard to bet on those teams. And in junior hockey, more than anywhere else, I think it makes a huge difference to have established that winning culture and that get that experience. Trumps a lot of things.
The only thing that the Battalion franchise has been unable to do, and maybe you look at this in the same or through the same lens as we just looked at Sudbury, is in a quarter century, zero OHL championships. The OHL finals appearances, and this goes back to, of course, I said Battalion franchise, right? So back in the Brampton days as well, but still, it's awfully difficult to make three consecutive championships. And again, five in the past decade, that is not a bad run for the Gateway City up there in North Bay. So kudos to Adam Dennis, Ryan Ulihan, the entire team in North Bay. And I think we're shaping up for a pretty decent final there between North Bay and Oshawa.
Definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned Ryan Ulihan, because for those that do not remember or did not see him play, you look at his style of play and you understand why this team's having success in the playoffs. That was a guy that was a 200-foot gamer, showed up every night, showed up every shift, won his draws, won his battles, won his races, cared about 200 feet from the opposing net as much as he did from scoring. And you establish that type of hockey IQ, that type of compete, and then you get a team under you that does the same thing.
Acknowledging what I said a moment ago about predictions being for suckers, I will just use this opportunity to inflate my own tires a wee bit again. At the beginning of the playoffs, before there were any injuries, I said North Bay, Saginaw in the final, still a possibility. But let's just say, because we'll talk about London in a bit, and we see them running through the league like a wagon right now. You imagine the storylines with Adam Dennis in North Bay, who won a Memorial Cup with Dale Hunter and the London Knights about 20 years ago, then going up against him. Anyway, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I'm looking for subplots already. We're not even in the OHL final, but North Bay and Oshawa will compete in the East for the chance to go to that OHL final. Speaking of Oshawa, we both acknowledged already, not only did we buy into Ottawa after their first round win over a pesky Hamilton team, but we certainly didn't expect, well, I wouldn't say we're shocked that Oshawa won the series. I am borderline shocked that they did it in four straight games. So I guess they just found that magic elixir again.
Well, that was a good Ottawa team. And that's why neither one of us predicted anything near a sweep, because those are two really good teams. When you kind of get those kind of heavyweight battles, you don't expect anyone to go down early. So it was really surprising that they did, but I think a few things maybe could have teased an outcome similar to this. You look at the improvement from Oshawa over the course of the year. They were, talk about a wagon. They were a wagon in the second half. Derek Laxdal just named coach of the year for the OHL, deservedly so. Game planning through the playoffs. And you watch those series, both their first series in Barrie and the second series, little adjustments were made. And I think one of the things against Ottawa that Oshawa identified was get that heavy forecheck on some of those puck moving defenders that aren't as comfortable with their back turned to the play, aren't as comfortable turning and finding the lanes, and you can create all kinds of turnovers. And if Ottawa doesn't get momentum up ice, suddenly they're on their heels. So Ottawa can be really dangerous when they're spending time in your end. And Ottawa just didn't really give them that opportunity very much. And look to me like Ottawa didn't have the answer to that. So that's full credit to the Oshawa coaching staff, full credit to the players for implementing it. Because when you have two teams that are relatively evenly matched on paper and you get domination like that, that speaks to the commitment up and down that organization, and kudos to them.
Commitment's a good word for it. I'm glad you mentioned Derek Laxdal as the OHL's coach of the year. Look, I think there were several names you could have thrown out there and nobody would have argued a whole heck of a lot. I think Jay McKee would have been in the mix again for what he did with that Brantford team. UC Ahokas, first half, I think he would have been the runaway winner. Obviously, things changed a little bit in the second half with Kitchener. How do you overlook a year like Dale Hunter had with the London Knights? Again, I know he's been there, done that, but consistency and commitment to the system matters. It's not easy keeping a team full of superstars focused. So Chris Lazary's name's in the mix, but I've gone back many times to the game I got to see with my own eyes when Kitchener was in Oshawa on New Year's Day. And Dan, I think I told you afterwards, I've said it like I said many times, it was one of the best hockey games I had the privilege of seeing all season long. Well played. You could tell both teams structured, buying into whatever systems the coaches were implementing. It was just a joy. It was a 3-2 game, so nothing crazy in terms of scoring or wild plays or anything like that. It was just a controlled, well-played hockey game. You could see then that Laxdal had made an impression on this Oshawa team. They're a year ahead of schedule by all accounts and very deserving. So kudos to Derek Laxdal and the Oshawa Generals, but Laxdal especially, because he's the one that gets named the coach of the year. And boy, oh boy, did he ring a lot out of Dylan Roebrick and Beckett Seneca in this series win over the Oshawa Generals, leading the way offensively. And then what can you say again, too, about Jacob Oster? I know we've talked about him since the playoffs began. But I guess the secret here, Dan, is if you want to go deep in the playoffs, you're going to have to get stellar, like above average goaltending. And Oshawa's getting that. Another 2.00 goals against average in the 4-game sweep, just like Mike McIver up in North Bay, and a 940 save percentage for Oster in that second round series. There is a reason they have swept their way to the East final.
Oster's been great ever since he got to Oshawa, right? And before he left in Guelph, looked like some struggles, wasn't sure he was ever going to take the reins in the OHL, heads down the 401 and instantly is just brilliant. And that, like you said, you could see some signs. I know McKenzie was great for Ottawa most of the year, had some signs of weakness in that first series, then of course got run over by that Oshawa team in the second. But yeah, when you talk about Derek Laxdal, there's some really stiff competition for a coach of the year, right? And he's fully deserving. And we already mentioned Ulihan. I think we're remiss not to mention John Dean in the Sioux as well. Phenomenal culture they've established up there, just an amazing year. So you have probably six or seven legitimate coaches, pro potential coaches in this league this year. So for Laxdal to kind of get the nod, no, I don't know if I'll say unanimously, but pretty convincingly says something about what he accomplished in Oshawa this year.
Pro potential coaches. I like the way you put that, because I don't think it's a secret. And a lot of organizations flat out talk about this being a development league, not just for players, but for coaches, for managers, for officials, etc. Do we need to go out and start signing coaches to 8-year contracts like Rob Wilson got in Peterborough, just for, like, selfishly, Dan, because I love the game at this level, like I do. I want to see that kind of stability. I want to see teams continue to mature under a consistent message and then let the players develop. And anyway, I totally understand the pursuit of the brass ring, so to speak, and I wouldn't fault any coach for taking the opportunity, but damn it, it is a loss to the league. It's one of the fatal flaws in the Ontario Hockey League major junior model in this country.
It is. And, you know, when you look at all these considerations, obviously everyone wants to get the pinnacle of their field. So the NHL would be that, perhaps. But it isn't for everyone. We saw Dale Hunter leave and come back. And, And when you look at the stability of coaching jobs, we always talk about coaches are hired to be fired. But if you are really good at this level, you don't necessarily be hired. You could probably maintain your gig for a long time doing good things at the junior level. And the lifestyle is different. Cost of living is a little lower. You're not away from your family all the time. So there's lots of positives to being in this league. So Mike, if you find a mutual agreement to lock a good coach up long-term, why not?
Absolutely. I'm thinking away from the CHL, but Gardner McDougal down with UNB has been there for decades now, has no intentions of going elsewhere. And I'm reminded of a conversation I had towards the end of the season in Guelph about Jeff Jackson, the former coach there. He's now at Notre Dame and has been for, if it's not more than 20, it's right around 20 years now, probably more than anyway. But there's another guy that found a hockey home. And you want to talk about, you know, some level of stability. How about NCAA Division I in a hockey program as opposed to maybe a football program where there might be less? But either way, you can make a tidy living and you're still coaching the game that you love. So anyway, we'll leave that there. Good points made all around. And while we're on the subject of coaches, we should acknowledge before we leave this Oshawa-Ottawa series, Bert O'Brien, well-known longtime assistant coach and member of the hockey operations staff in Ottawa. He lost his wife of 56 years, Kathy, earlier this month. So that's just a heartbreaker. 56 years married. So condolences to the O'Brien family, Bert in particular. And rest in peace to Kathy, who was, by all accounts, just a terrific woman and a terrific support to Bert and everything he's done in hockey all these years. All right, let's shift our attention over to the West. And before we get to the Game 7 that will be happening the day this episode is released, London Kitchener, you alluded to it already, Dan, that not really a surprise for anyone here, considering, you know, at Christmas, it might have looked different. But by the time the playoffs rolled around and the way round one went, everybody knew that the Kitchener Rangers were in tough, and the London Knights showed them exactly how tough they were in. A four-game sweep, London makes it look relatively easy. And I think that we might have said all we need to say about London and how they got to where they are and how they do what they do last week, because boy, oh boy, did we generate an awful lot of reaction to last week's episode, including our buddy Johnny807, who has emailed this podcast a number of times and said, you guys sounded like something that I would have read on a Facebook fan page trying to troll fans of the other team. So all I will say in response to that before turning it over to you, Dan, is I got a cheeky text from another buddy in the league this week who reminded me, and I will quote, "Thou shalt only speak of the London Knights the way the London Knights dost say thou shalt speaketh of them." And I will leave it at that. By the way, email anytime, ohlpodcast@rogers.com. I guess we have a lot of fans in London, Dan, or listeners who may not be fans anymore. I don't know, but London loves the OHL podcast.
Well, I only have one message for those fans in London, and that's like, grow a thicker skin, please, because we have plenty of good to say about the London Knights. I feel like I've been effusive in the praise of that team all year. The on-ice product is terrific. The disciplines to structure and system, the forecheck, the positioning, the getting in lanes, everything they do between the whistles is phenomenal. And I'm not taking that away from them. I thought the ramp up that we always see in London every year, where those guys get better and better. And Jacob Julian had a phenomenal series. They made it happen without Caleb Lawrence when he missed the last game. They had two games without Sam O'Reilly. So they were players rotating in and out. So they were phenomenal. So I'm certainly not anti-London here. The only point we were trying to make is I'm not a big fan of antics beyond the game. And that wasn't just directed at London. That was directed at any of this stuff that goes on. But just to turn the tide on that series, Mike, on the Kitchener side, I think you're right. They were not the same team after Christmas as they were before. And I think we all saw that coming. And I'll just say it. I never really felt they were built well for the playoffs. I felt their core group up front was skilled, but maybe not quite the highest compete and battle level, which doesn't bode well for the playoffs. And then, of course, the injuries were just, Mitchell Martin was going to be a huge piece to that team if they were going to go anywhere in the playoffs. He was not healthy all year, tried to play the last couple of games, clearly was not healthy. Then you look at the defense corps was a little bit thin on veteran talent. They had 4 to 5 veterans, 3 of whom got hurt for the playoffs at some point. So they're running a bunch of rookies out there against London, including a rookie forward. So there was just, it went from a low percentage chance of having any chance to win that series to zero. So it was not surprising at all, the outcome there. But hopefully there's some lessons learned there, because if you're going to take out that London team in any given year, London's going to be the same next year and probably the year after. So you got to adapt. Teams that don't adapt don't succeed.
Yeah, and my point on, and I'll leave it on London last week and again now, and I'll just go back to my buddy's cheeky message. Thou shalt only speak of the London Knights the way the London Knights doth say thou shalt speaketh of them. That's the frustration. It's nothing wrong with the way that the London Knights are doing things. It's just the unwillingness to admit that you're doing them the way you're doing them. It's a very successful model. And obviously, you said it perfectly, Dan. If teams in the Western Conference want to go through it, they're going to have to figure out a way how to do the same thing, only a little bit better, or perhaps a little bit luckier with the pucks bouncing their way in a particular series. We'll see. No matter what, I think the West Final, both Sault Ste. Marie and Saginaw, are going to be a formidable foe for the London Knights. But boy, oh boy, is London ever licking their chops, just sitting back saying, perfect, Game 7, knock yourselves out, literally. So we'll see how that shapes up. Just to finish a point on the Kitchener Rangers, we also got an email from Josh to OHLpodcast@rogers.com. And he's obviously a Rangers fan, and he's actually rather excited, Dan, about what he saw from this team in Kitchener this year and what it means for the future. Now, having been around the team this year and speaking often with head coach Jussi Ahokas, he referred to it as money in the bank. There were games where I believe Kitchener had as many as 6 rookies in the lineup on a given night. And sometimes these guys would be pressed into situations that they would not otherwise be getting in their rookie season. So the money in the bank idea is you're developing experience in key moments of games, and that's only going to bode well, hopefully, with interest down the road. So I think Josh's enthusiasm for this Rangers team in the years ahead is pretty well placed right now.
Oh, definitely. That 07 group, Josh, is terrific. You saw the 4 who played regular this year, and Mike, you just referenced Andrew McNeil coming in for an elimination game against the London Knights and thrown into the fire in the back end, acquitted himself extremely well. We saw Cameron Arquette, who's been terrific for Leamington this year, come in and do spot duty this year up front. So there's your 607s and another hopefully strong draft here. So yeah, the younger crop of Kitchener Rangers showed tons of promise, and hopefully they're quick learners as well, because like we just talked about, Mike, with London and Oshawa and these other teams, the successful teams get significantly better between September and March. And if you're not doing that, you're not winning. So yeah, tons of reason for optimism, Josh. I'm with you.
A brief aside, based on the amount of feedback we got from last week's episode, indicating that plenty of people either listen from London or are fans of the Knights, which is fine. And then, you know, Johnny807's email, a regular emailer to the show, pointing out how he felt about it. I just start thinking about the touch points. We've got regular emailers from Kingston, Niagara, Johnny807, Rhode Island is another one that comes in from time to time, our buddy out there who loves the Ontario Hockey League. And I started thinking through the markets. As far as I can tell, Dan, the only 2 markets where we haven't had a verified bona fide touch point is North Bay and Barrie. So if you're listening from there, let us know. OHLpodcast@rogers.com, or drop a comment on the YouTube channel or on the pod, whatever, and let us know where you're listening from. Would love to know. I get the sense that because we're based in Kitchener, most of the fans might be from this particular region, but listen, it's a great league. There's a lot of passion for it. We've been hearing from all around, except you, North Bay and Barrie. Let's go. And if I've forgotten about you, forgive me. I'm getting old and I'm a Leafs fan. Well, I don't know what else you want from me. Okay, let's move on to the Game 7 that has set itself up, as I said, as we're recording this in between Game 6 and 7 in Sault Ste. Marie's and Saginaw's series. The Hounds put a pretty big statement on their game six win, backs against the wall. Okay, we'll just beat you 5-0 and send it back to Saginaw for game number seven. What have you made of this series so far, Dan? Everything we kind of thought it would be. I picked Saginaw in six, so that's gone. You had them in seven.
I had them in seven, but it was really hard to pick this one, Mike, because it was very much a coin flip for me. Both outstanding teams. I fully expected this to be the best series of round two, and it's lived up to that billing. A few surprises. As close as it is, 3-3, a lot of the games haven't been close. There have been a few blowouts either way. Tit for tat. You like to see those adjustments. Watching game six, boy, was so impressive. Just steamrolling in their own building. And if you're Saginaw, you got to be a little bit concerned. Of course, they're missing Hache on the back end, so playing a couple younger players is... Couple guys lost their composure at times. We've seen some kind of nasty play in this series. I know Zane Parekh got away with a cross check that probably could have been suspension worthy. James Goh had another slash last night that may still hear from the league. So you don't like to see that loss of composure, and Saginaw is starting to feel maybe a little bit vulnerable on the back end. Sue was dancing through the blue line last night, creating lots of chances. They've kind of found a secret to attack with speed. Sue always does. And I know things can turn back the other way really quickly. So I don't know what to expect in game seven, but really, really impressive efforts from both teams at times so far, but particularly in my mind, the Sioux.
More on that Zane Parekh cross check in just a bit. You made me think of something. This is a complete aside, but I just want to throw it in when you mentioned a slash by James Goh. I am no, and this is the third time, and I promise I won't admit it again or talk about it again, because this is the OHL podcast, but as a Leafs fan, I'm watching game one between the Leafs and the Bruins, and I am no Brad Marchand fan, make no mistake. But the amount of respect I gained for that guy watching Max Domi slash him across the wrist to pick up a penalty. And what did Marchand do? Shake it off, stay. He obviously goaded Domi just by lipping him, and being the playoff veteran that he is, Marchand's just like, yeah, go ahead, slash me. I'm just going to shake it off. I'm not going to respond physically. You're going to take the penalty. We're going to score on the power play. Anyway, as much as I dislike Brad Marchand, I really appreciated that play and that style from him. I'll goad you into something just by mouthing you off. Back to the series. Here's something, the Saginaw-Sioux series. Here's something that's really struck me, Dan. And this was Hounds GM Kyle Raftus talking to independent reporter who does a Sioux Greyhounds web presence in Peter Rucci, who's been covering the Sioux Greyhounds for a long, long time. But Raftus told Rucci that he had been in contact with the league, and the league admitted that Owen Allard's penalty shot that he was awarded in game five should have counted as a goal. And that was a game that Saginaw won 3-2 in overtime. So you wonder, geez, is that a difference maker? And then the other one, back on Parekh, should have been assessed a major penalty instead of the minor that he got. This, to me, Dan, is really surprising stuff that the league isn't kind of circling the wagons around its officials and or video review processes. I was just surprised to read that in Peter's reporting on the series.
Yeah, and if so, good on them for acknowledging the mistake. But you're right, we have the tools to kind of rectify some of this stuff. And I know some folks on the Saginaw side feel that Parekh's been kind of viciously targeted at times in this series. But you expect this when you're a high-skilled player, you're a dynamic player who engages. So I'm not saying he deserves to be injured, which he kind of is right now. We know he hasn't been healthy this series. He's left a couple games with injury, left the previous game with injury. We're not sure the severity. So all adding up to some trouble for Saginaw. But yeah, you don't like to see these sticks to head and cross checks and these things that can definitely do some damage. You referenced it with Domi and Marchand, Mike, and the name of the game is composure. You got to keep your composure for so many reasons. One, you can't put your team in the box and down the penalty kill all the time. But two, you can't show the opposition it's getting to you. You can't let that emotional side of the game. Once those scales tip, and you could see it last night, Mike, in the Sioux. Once the Sioux smelled blood and realized they were kind of getting to them, getting some of those reactions, it was just steamroll time. So kids, the lesson to be learned here is composure, no matter where you are in the game. I mean, keep the sticks down, keep the emotional reactions down, and just don't let them see you sweat.
All right. Still to come on this episode of the OHL podcast. Everybody's a ref, or at least everybody is reviewing the refs, considering options outside the O. We learned from the draft a week ago that many players were doing just that, and our performers of the week still to come. Stay with us on this episode of the OHL podcast. Okay, before we get to some of the other issues, and I do want to talk about officiating a little bit, we should give a shout out. We already talked about Derek Laxtal, Dan. The Leo Lalonde Overager of the Year is Matthew Sopp of the Kitchener Rangers, and the Rookie of the Year goes to Jake O'Brien of the Brantford Bulldogs. I know you were a big O'Brien fan throughout this season.
Yeah, very, very deserving. I was really happy to see that nod. A lot of terrific rookies in the, I mean, to win one of these awards, you're beating some really stiff competition. You just talked about Matthew Sopp. You just look at the work of the Overagers in these playoffs. So there's, but on the O'Brien front, I mean, just quietly had a phenomenal season. When you have a 16-year-old player on a system where they're asked to play physically, they're asked to play up and down the ice, not a run and gun offensive team, and still managed to come close to point a game. We knew from his U16 year coming into the draft that Jake O'Brien was a player, put on a snipe show at the OHL Cup the previous year. So we knew this was going to be a player in this league. I just didn't realize he was going to erupt so soon, but we're very well deserving for him.
Other deserving nods, Henry Muse and Frankie Morelli of the Ottawa 67s and Jack Ivankovic of the Mississauga Steelheads. Do I call them the Brampton Steelheads now that the season is over? I don't know. Either way, they're named to Canada's U18 entry at the World Championships in Finland later this month. Congratulations to those young men, and enjoy that ride for sure. Okay, something that has been on my mind over the past week, Dan, and anybody that knows me and the work I do in the league probably knows that I'm fairly active on social media. I like to use it as a place to engage with people, have a little bit of fun, be a smart ass. I think that's what it's supposed to be used for. I try not to argue too much, but because of that, I've been getting, and I get it. And I'm not opposed to it. Don't get me wrong, but tagged in a lot of different things that are showing replays of things that happened in games that I might not have seen, or maybe people just want to draw my attention to, which I love. I love taking it all in. I love the engagement aspect of it, but it's got me thinking about being an official in this league and being out there on the ice, watching things happen in real time, which is very fast. I don't need to remind you of that. Making your judgment, either calling the penalty, the minor, the major, or no penalty at all. And then watching, and I hope these guys are probably smart enough to stay the hell away from social media at this point, I would assume. I don't know. Or maybe you just can't help yourself. It's like a soap opera that you're addicted to and you have to go check it out. But to watch it get, games get re-refereed, plays get reanalyzed frame by frame in slow motion by not just the people that are supposed to be grading your performance, i.e. the league supervisors, but by fans in general. Like, these things pop up online within minutes of a game, maybe within minutes of the play, and all of a sudden, everybody is re-refereeing the job that you have done. I've even seen more and more instances now where these videos are getting embedded into mainstream media stories that we all might read for a game recap. And all of a sudden there's the video of this particular questionable hit from this or that random Twitter account. And I'm like, or X account, whatever I'm supposed to call it. Sorry, Elon Musk. But wow, I don't know, Dan, maybe I'm getting soft in my old age here, but I'm really feeling for the officials whose job it is to deal with this stuff in real time. They've got a hard enough job. They're getting graded by their supervisors as it is. And now we've got thousands and thousands of fans re-refereeing games or individual plays after the fact. It's a wild, wild west out there.
Well, it's awful, especially when you're trying to do a job like that that's already under pressure, Mike. You know my sentiments. I feel that social media is about 10% good and 90% terrible. And one of the problems with this type of thing on social media, Mike, is you're looking at 3, 5, 10 second clips, snapshots in time. It's soundbite evaluation is what it is. You see these clips and they come with zero context. They come with zero commentary. No one has any kind of sense of the game, who the people involved were. They're just judging everything based on this little clip, which they've had to watch several times. And then of course, using it to judge the players involved, worse, to judge the officials involved. No clue anything else that was going on. These sound bites now, these tiny clips, become the narrative for a game, which maybe was completely different, had something completely else going on that these people are unaware of. So that's my biggest issue with it. Officiating is a hard enough job as is, and I know everyone likes to complain about the officials and, oh, the OHL officiating is so terrible. How'd they miss that? Yes, they're going to miss calls. You would miss calls too if you were doing it. It happens. What I've seen by and large, I will say this, is, and I'm probably going to get a lot of feedback for this too, Mike, but by and large, I've seen really good officiating this, especially in these playoffs where you have really emotional, tight games with lots going on. And I think that there's been some fairly well-managed games in this playoffs. It's a tough job when you're getting judged on a clip showing up on social media an hour later.
It's funny you say that, Dan, because I have felt similarly. I think I've said it on the podcast a number of times through the season. But interestingly enough, wouldn't you believe, what game was it? Game two. It had to be because it was in London. So we finish game two, the broadcast. By we, I mean my broadcast partner and I, Paul Fixter. And we felt it had been a pretty well-officiated game. And we're talking to our colleagues on press row afterwards. And I won't name names to protect the innocent. And I'm not saying they're bad people, but they had a polar opposite view of how the same game had just been officiated. Because the first question was, how'd you feel about the officiating in that one? I said, actually, I thought it was pretty good. What? You thought that this is the word? Well, and then they went off about how bad it's been in the league and this. And I thought, isn't that interesting? So, you know, a group of broadcasters having just watched the same game felt completely differently about how that game was officiated. And I think emotion plays a part in this, right? If you feel as though your team was wronged, and your team can be the team that you cover, I'm sorry, but I defy anyone who follows a team for 68 games plus however many in the playoffs doesn't develop some sort of bias towards that team, flat out. And so I'm pointing out that this was a game in London that the Kitchener Rangers lost, and I'm like, that was pretty well officiated. Whatever. But in watching two of the videos that came across my radar in the past week, and probably everybody else's too, the Caleb Lawrence hit on Simon Motu and the Bryce McConnell Barker hit on Andrew Oak in the Saginaw Sioux series, I can tell you honestly, with all emotion removed from the game, I can see both sides. I can see how if you're London, you would say that was incidental contact between Caleb Lawrence and Simon Motu. And if you're Kitchener, you'll say that was a vicious hit and we need to take it out of the game. I can see how you would look at that snippet of video and make that and draw that conclusion. I can tell you the same thing about having watched that Bryce McConnell Barker hit on Andrew Oak in behind the net in Saginaw. I don't need to go into it. The fans get passionate about this. They have a soapbox now, a platform. Things, especially controversial hits and plays in sport, can go viral in a hurry. And my only hope, I'll just say again, is that the officials in this league stay the hell off social media. Because you just don't need the aggravation. You've gone through enough just trying to get through the game, trying to keep your wits about you, trying to have a thick enough skin that I've advocated for, that if a coach gets mad, deal with it in the game without kicking people out, blah, blah, blah. It's tough out there. And everybody's re-refereeing everybody else.
Well, Mike, I would say a couple things just to answer that. One, to properly evaluate officials fairly, I think you have to have an open mind, and a lot of people don't. I think the expected narrative is, oh, the officials are terrible. They're awful. They're brutal. That feels like what people think they have to say and should say. And the other thing is, officials are evaluated on their worst moments. They can have a great game. They miss one call, especially at a key time, and that's what they're judged on. So especially in the social media realm, when those are the things that are broadcast and amplified for the next several days. So if you keep those things in mind and set your expectations appropriately and keep an open mind, then maybe, and judge things in the context of a game, not a social media clip, I think people would be a lot more fair to these officials. Because I will say, I feel like in some ways the OHL officiating this year has been better than the NHL, which has had some mighty blips as well. So I just feel that too often that's the expected narrative. Something happened I didn't like. They missed a call I didn't like. Therefore, they're all terrible.
Forgive me for missing a call last week. I keep notes. I make notes so that Dan and I, after we exchange multiple text messages, can kind of stay on track for our episodes here and deliver the content we want to deliver. And I completely blanked. I gapped totally. My fault on talking about the draft, which happened last weekend just before our episode was released. So let's get into that a little bit, Dan. I'll let you talk to the draft itself, and then I think there's a conversation to be had around the number of players, high profile too, that had announced ahead of time that they were going to explore options outside of the Ontario Hockey League. And in fact, did just that. Some really talented hockey players have gone elsewhere. And I think there's a story there, but you know, in broad strokes, the U16s have now entered the Ontario Hockey League. The draft was held a weekend ago.
Yeah, and it felt to me this year like the first round was really strong. There was a lot of talent up and down that round. So I'm sure some of the picks at 17 and 18 might outperform those at 8 and 9, just as an example. We'll never know until a couple years down the road. But a couple storylines that I thought were really neat, one being that, so with Brady Wasilin vying for potentially being picked first overall, consensus top three pick, got snagged by the Niagara Ice Dogs and has signed. So second year in a row, the Niagara Ice Dogs have signed their top pick with Ryan Rubrik last year. So great news for the Niagara fans. So that's a storyline. But you mentioned, of course, some of the talent that we're not quite sure right now. Teams did not shy away from it. Kayla Malhotra picked in the first round. Colin Fitzgerald, a few players that teased having, I know Malhotra with a tender in the BCHL. USHL options for a lot of these players they've teased. So we'll watch the next few weeks to see who does and doesn't sign, because there's some teams that are in a little bit of limbo now with their first picks. But if they all manage to come here, there was a heck of a lot of talent in that first round.
The Ontario Hockey League has got to be taking note of this. Yes, this has got to be. I know they don't want to say it out loud, and they won't say it out loud, and I understand why they won't say it out loud, but they've got to be taking notice of this and recognizing that on some level, there's a wee problem here if some of the best talent is saying, yeah, you know what? We think we have options that might serve us better than your league. And I say that as a guy that's covered the league for a number of years and believes it to be, I truly do believe the Ontario Hockey League to be the best development league in North America. So if the players aren't feeling that way, this is a red flag. Yes, Dan Mahar?
It is. I'm not sure so much though that they're not feeling that way, Mike, as there's a whole bunch of considerations here. And I think when you factor it all, so obviously we know the current dynamic is if you sign for the CHL team, you close off your NCAA options. That is far and away the biggest factor for these 16-year-old players who say, well, you know, I might not get a lot of ice time this year. I've got time here. Why am I going to sign right now when I could maybe keep these options open? So that's not the OHL or the CHL's fault. That's something not in their control that's not working in their favor. But I think you add in some factors as well, Mike. Like Hockey Canada's had a whole lot of terrible press lately for good reason. And when you look at leagues like the BCHL stepping outside of the Hockey Canada banner or these American options, USHL, those become maybe more appealing to some of these players that say, you know, Hockey Canada hasn't got its stuff together. But I think at the end of the day, and this is my biased plug, I think you're absolutely right. There's no doubt the CHL and the OHL in particular are the best developmental leagues there are. And you have to ask yourself that question. Say, do I want to be on kind of a fast track to pro hockey? And you look at the playoffs right now in the NHL and how it's littered with CHL talent, that's where you want to be. So I think it's more a consideration for the second and third tier talents that aren't quite sure what they're going to be in the CHL, might need more time to bulk up. But for the top kids, there's still no doubt in my mind, Mike, that that's where you want to be.
The schedule, the training, the environments that you're playing in, it goes on and on, that I think makes it the premier development league in North America, the fast track, as you just called it, Dan. The stricter side of me struggles with the idea that the players have or are exerting so much influence on this. I have zero concern with a player having options. I'm glad that they do, and they can pick what's best for them. But once it gets picked, I think there has to be more of a commitment to then sticking with it. I understand, and the NCAA CHL thing may be changing this summer, right? Sounds, in fact, like it will be, that by playing major junior, you will not automatically, and it makes sense to do this, negate your future NCAA rights, which would be great maybe for 19 going on 20-year-olds that aren't going to have a spot in the CHL, maybe want to pop down and play some NCAA. But I'm a little bit concerned, and I got into this conversation with a colleague of mine who's out in the Alberta Junior Hockey League, who also happens to be with one of those five teams that have defected out from under the Hockey Canada umbrella and joined the sort of rogue or renegade BCHL. And he was saying, he was making the point that he didn't think it was fair that teams could essentially control a 16 or a 17-year-old. I'm like, well, whatever happened to making your commitment? And it's not just the kid, it's the family. But if you sign the contract, and this was when we got into the conversation, it was around the whole NCAA CHL agreement that we're expecting will change. And I'm like, there have to be some guardrails around it. He said, well, why? I'm like, well, because if you commit to a team and a team's going to build itself around you, then I think you owe the team something. And my buddy's like, I don't think you do. The kid gets to ultimately determine where he wants to play. He's got free will. I'm like, I guess, but I don't know about that. Anyway, I don't need to go too deeply into it. I was going to make a comparison to non-compete clauses in broadcasting, whereby, you know, if I leave the radio station I'm working at, there's a period that I have to wait before I can work for another radio station in the same market because of competitive reasons and stuff. I just think that somebody's commitment, somebody's word, somebody's signature on a damn contract should still account for something. And I don't think that's unfair. You're getting, from everything I've seen across the Ontario Hockey League, look, there are some thorns on the rose. I get that. But generally speaking, you're putting your child in a pretty damn good environment. You can certainly work your way into one of the better environments if you're concerned about some of the thorns. I'll tell you that much for free.
Well, Mike, I couldn't agree more. And I would take it a step further and say, when you get these opinions, because everybody's in a hurry to vilify the CHL and junior hockey teams, like they're these big bad corporations, they're using terms like slave labor and controlling these kids. Now, you ask yourself who the source is and consider what their interests are. It's often coming from these rival leagues. They're recruiting the same kids. The NCAA, they're coming from interests like that or agents who want better deals for their kids. At the end of the day, these are not terrible controlling organizations. These are organizations that have mutual interest with you and the player that want to develop him as much as the kid wants to develop himself. And they provide the tools and a clear track record, lots of resources, the billet situation, all of that stuff. They're not the big bad villain that a lot of these people want to clarify that they are, pretend they are. And when they're taking shots at the CHL, it's kind of funny because it would make sense. Are they trying to suggest that these other leagues are perfect and all those situations, all those organizations are so much better? It's not the case at all. It's about self-interest and they want the recruitment edge over the CHL when everyone knows that it's a good situation. If you're you, like you said, there are thorns on the rose, and there are in the USHL, there are in the BCHL, there are in the NCAA. So let's not pretend that the CHL is doing anything nefarious here. They've got a great track record. So I think these narratives, the point being, Mike, that let's take these narratives with a grain of salt. They all always tend to stem from someone with an interest in that in the CHL not succeeding.
I just want to add one more element to this, because your point earlier, Dan, about the reputation of Hockey Canada right now and where it's at is so well taken. I think I've alluded to this on the podcast through this season at least once, but I'm just going to be a lot more direct and blunt about it here. There's more coming. Okay. The BCHL going rogue and a handful of teams from the AJHL joining the renegade BCHL league outside of, or no longer under the umbrella of Hockey Canada. There's more coming. the so-called Junior B loop in Ontario, the Greater Ontario Junior Hockey League, is about to have a mass defection. Almost every team is going to remove itself from under the Hockey Canada banner and go its own way. That's coming. I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school to Hockey Canada, but this has been simmering for a while and it's getting way too loud for me to ignore anymore. So I'll just put that out here right here. So when you hear that happen, and for reasons that the Hockey Canada umbrella isn't serving them well enough anymore, they don't think they're able to do what they want with players or provide the experience to players that they want to provide. And we'll just see where it goes. I'll remind you in all of this that it was just over 40 years ago that the Ontario Hockey League defected or broke ties with the Ontario Hockey Association. That happened back in 1982. And back then, if you can believe it, the OHA was saying, well, the Memorial Cup's our trophy, so we're not sure the OHL is even going to be competing for it. And I think we all know which organization or which league has come out on top of that little split back in 1982. So it's really interesting times, but there are more teams a-coming and a whole bunch of them coming out from under that Hockey Canada umbrella.
Yeah, it's a scary potential horizon. And I think the cynic in me says at the end of the day, Mike, everyone's always in it for the same thing, which is money. Just like at the pro level, they're trying to be financially competitive and get an advantage over their competitors. So you got to keep all of these things in mind when you're evaluating anything. But I'm with you on the commitment piece. If these OHL teams are there to help their prospects get better, and when you sign over, there's a commitment there. It's not free will to decide, oh, 2 months later, I want to go somewhere else so I can get more ice time and force their hand. It's a two-way commitment. They're going to pour a whole lot of resources into you. So it should be a little bit of two-way as long as everything's on the up and up. So I'm with you there.
Well, damn it, Dan. I think I said earlier I was not going to mention them again, but I have to. I got a Leafs game, playoffs here. I mean, they don't last very long for me to get to. So let's get to our performers of the week here in the Ontario Hockey League playoffs. Who you got?
All right, Mike. Well, I'll be quick because I'm not going to shock you with this one. But I looked at all the candidates available, and I got to go with Sandis Filmanis. Heck of a playoffs. 9 games. 16 points. This is the kind of uptick in playoff performance you love to see from these players. But the thing that leaps off the page to me is in 9 games, plus 13. And demean the plus minus all you want as a meaningless stat. It means something when you are plus 13 in 9 playoff games. So amongst a sea of fairly worthy candidates this week, Mike, I got Sandis Filmanis.
What a deadline acquisition for Adam Dennis up in North Bay. Great pick. Filmanis was certainly on my radar. And I think we'd be remiss. The Ontario Hockey League has already handed out the flowers, but it's hard to ignore back-to-back hat tricks for Jacob Julian of the London Knights. I will only ignore it insofar as for Jacob Julian and the Knights didn't have the most formidable opponent at the time. Boy, the Kitchener Rangers defense was completely depleted. Not to take anything away from back-to-back Hatties. It's heck of a performance. But I was also looking elsewhere, and I found a guy named Bryce McConnell Barker, who I just enjoyed doing what he did when he did it. 3 goals, 3 assists for 6 points in the past 3 games. But those games, one was back against the wall for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. One was an overtime loss, and the other was the other victory to tie the series for the Sioux Greyhounds. So 2 wins and an OT loss. You're picking up 3 goals, 3 assists for your hockey club. And I like performances that come through maybe when they matter the most. And that's why I looked at Bryce McConnell Barker as my performer of the week this week.
Yeah, great choice. He shows up every game. What you want out of your captain, what you want, and perfect for the culture up in Sioux. So great. Another great choice.
By the time we get to next week, we will be down to 4 teams remaining. An exhausted Saginaw Spirit or Sioux Greyhound team against the well-rested London Knights, who, by the way, I should add, 8-0. That's the same way the Kitchener Rangers started the 08 playoffs. And when that happened, there was all the talk about, can they beat the 16-2 record? That's the best playoff record Ottawa, I'm pretty sure, has it, that's ever been had in the Ontario League. Kitchener got to 15-1. They were a game away from sweeping Belleville in the OHL final. Belleville won the next 3, and Kitchener finishes the playoffs. They win, but 16-4. That season. So 16-2 is the best mark. London is halfway there. If they only drop one more game, they will establish a new mark. If they drop none, obviously they have it in their sights to establish a new mark for best playoff record in the Ontario Hockey League history. It's pretty impressive the way they've gone through so far. So it'll be them against a tired Saginaw or Sioux team, and we've already got Oshawa and North Bay in the East.
I think we're in for a treat, Mike. I don't think, I know my predictions don't go well, but I don't think we're going to see a sweep in round three.
Yeah, we say that now, and then we'll make our predictions. We'll look like fools again in 2 weeks' time. All right, that guy over there is Dan Mehar. You'll find him on Twitter at his name, M-E-A-G-H-E-R. Stop asking me how to spell it. I have to write it down so I remember it. M-E-A-G-H-E-R, just like Rick, who was a captain for the St. Louis Blues. Dan Mehar on Twitter. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell_OHL. Send us an email anytime. OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Like, subscribe, follow on YouTube, follow on Instagram. Tell a friend. Even if you don't like what we talk about, we love having you listen. We love getting your feedback, even if you think we're a couple of knuckleheads who are trolling London fans as if we were on Facebook. Thanks for listening and being a part of the OHL podcast community.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.